You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. In your backyard. And worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumour.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes. What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes.
Yeah, minutes.
It's not next year, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McCollum. In recent times on Tech Talk Radio, we've spoken about the next generation of websites, otherwise known as Web 2.0. Wikipedia defines Web 2 as a term often applied to a perceived ongoing transition of the World Wide Web, from a collection of websites to a fully fledged computing platform, serving web applications to end users. Ultimately, Web 2.0 services are expected to replace desktop computing applications for many purposes. Collaboration and interactivity is at the heart of this new genre of websites. Amongst the ever-increasing interactive sites are blog sites, or websites where you can keep a journal about absolutely anything. Visitors can read your site and interact with you. In other words, you've created your very own soapbox where spruiking, voicing your opinion, or unashamed self-expression are all encouraged. Maybe you'll be deemed an influential site. That is, a site where you can alter readers' thoughts and opinions on specific issues. And in the world of free speech, this is good. If you've ever wanted to write a blog, all will be revealed on today's show. It'll cost you nothing but time and some internet access. WordPress.com is one such website offering literary wannabes a precipice where they can jump headfirst into the world of a biographer, columnist, correspondent, critic, journalist, or novelist. But just remember, never believe everything you read on the internet.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Lydia Davis talks to Matt Mullenweg from WordPress, who coincidentally are celebrating their fourth birthday. Adam Turner puts his feet up on the couch again. Vandals strike at the ABC. Telstra is forcing its customer service staff to sell internet, mobile phone and other products to callers and has put 20% of their salaries at risk if they fail to reach sales targets. Coonan caught out over broadband sledging. Skimmers hit the Westpac bank. Nigerians scamming Queenslanders to the tune of $500,000 a month. And our story that fell through the holes last week, Google's universal search coming to a web browser near you. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the IT world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Australia is not a broadband backwater, says Coonan. New PS3 firmware upscales DVDs to high def. Facebook gives access to developers. Visit to Australia by Microsoft's Steve Ballmer is shrouded in secrecy. And Ericsson and Telstra trial fibre technology to 40 gigabits per second. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Last week, Minister for Communications, Senator the Honourable Helen Coonan, committed to working with the OECD in an effort to, quote-unquote, improve its reporting on broadband. The announcement came after the OECD, or Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, released a report ranking Australia in 17th position for broadband subscription rates out of 20 developed nations. Senator Coonan said she had concerns about the OECD's methodology and questioned the weight given to any one single indicator of broadband performance. Despite scepticism of Senator Coonan's comments given the upcoming federal election in Australia, her statement was corroborated by independent industry analyst Market Clarity, which criticised the OECD and re-ranked Australia from 17th position to 6th. But the Market Clarity report was rejected by the federal opposition. Shadow Minister for Communications and Information Technology, Stephen Conroy, said that the government was blindly trusting a report by a recently formed minor Australian analyst company over a long-standing, universally respected international organisation. Good news for owners of the PlayStation 3 games console and high-definition televisions this week. Sony Computer Entertainment has announced the release of a firmware upgrade which it says will upscale DVDs and PlayStation and PlayStation 2 games to 1080p resolution for compatible high-definition televisions. PlayStation 3, the latest games console from Sony, which incorporates an integrated Blu-ray disc player, will now have the ability to upscale compatible PS and PS2 games, as well as titles from owners' DVD collections. Sony said the new PS3 firmware will also allow users on a home network to access images, music and video stored on devices which are compatible with the Digital Living Network Alliance standard, such as PCs and laptops, elsewhere in users' homes. Sony says its firmware update, used in conjunction with DLNA 3 devices, will allow streaming image, video and music content to PS3, and that this reinforces the PS3's credentials as a home entertainment hub. Popular social networking site Facebook is now inviting software developers to sell products and create applications in an effort to grow into an all-purpose destination on the World Wide Web. Facebook was founded in February 2004 and was intended to be a virtual version of paper Facebooks distributed by Harvard and other colleges in the United States. In less than 1 year, Facebook has nearly 1 million active users and, according to co-founder Mark Zuckerberg, is now the sixth most trafficked site in the United States. Dave Morin is a senior platform manager at Facebook and had this to say about the launch of the new application programmer's interface.
People should build an application on the Facebook platform because it provides a new kind of distribution on the internet. Really, what has been lacking in all of the other operating systems and platforms that have ever been created is the ability to really access people.
The newly released Facebook developer application provides easy access for developers to settings within the Facebook environment, including client libraries, sample code, and sample applications. Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer completed a whirlwind tour of Australia last week when he arrived on Thursday to address the American Chamber of Commerce at Sydney's Sheraton Hotel before leaving to head home on Friday. But his itinerary was notably covert, and a Microsoft spokeswoman said that no media would be allowed in to report on the speech at the Sheraton. Microsoft's silencing of Steve Ballmer may be owing to recent blunders by the CEO, such as that in February when he said that revenue forecasts for Windows Vista were overly aggressive. Melbourne newspaper The Age also suggested that Microsoft may want to avoid being dragged into the domestic broadband debate in an election year, and as a result, Mr. Ballmer's visit to Australia was very low-key. And IT Wire on Friday reported that Ericsson and Telstra have claimed a world first by boosting the speed of live fibre optic links between Sydney and Melbourne from 10 gigabits per second to 40 gigabits per second. Dan Burns, Executive Managing Director of Networking and Technology at Telstra, said that the trial was commissioned as part of Telstra's forward planning to meet expected growth on intercapital networks, and said that the trial demonstrates the capability of Telstra's next IP network and effectively positions Telstra at the forefront of industry development to implement high-capacity, long-distance transmission. The benefit is a network capacity expansion in line with expected growth in IP traffic with minimal financial investment. The network is used to carry IP traffic for voice, data and video. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
The decision on broadband, is it going to be based on someone's short-term political future, or is it going to be based on an educated decision for the country's well-being beyond this next election?
Dr. Ron's really the expert on that,
he
so
is.
We might have to
talk to him about it.
Yeah.
You're so antisocial. You're always on that computer, rah, 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 rah.
All right, let's talk Telstra briefly. It might not be too briefly. Take their $4.1 billion bat and ball, and Phil Burgess has gone off again. He'll come back. He always does.
It often gets me at 3 a.m. I can tell you that.
Microsoft has bought Aquantiv for $6 billion US.
Now, bought a what?
Whatever you do, don't push that button.
Yeah. Thing. So what will they get from the Flight Box Recorder?
Well, what they'll get from that, they'll get two things. They'll get the Flight Data Recorder and the Cockpit Voice Recorder.
What sort of technology will be there?
It's actually very, very interesting technology. It's recorded on a metal tape.
I think that, with all due respect to Senator Coonan, that she might have more important things to worry about at the moment.
Entertaining, informative, independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio.
one and all, whether you're listening to us in the southern parts of Australia, or the nice warm parts of Australia, up there in Cairns and those sort of places, or whether you're listening to us on the pod, on the train, in the tube somewhere, maybe in a plane, we get listened to everywhere, even in Manila. We had some interesting feedback last week from people online listening to us live in Manila. Hi, Darren, if you're out there. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Send us an email if you're listening to us right now. We like hearing from everyone. Dr. Ron, how has it been for you technologically-wise this week?
Extraordinarily hectic, Andrew, but thank you for asking. It's great to be back in here again. And also,
it is good. It's lovely to see you again, too, but you're on holidays now, and that's got to be good.
Again? Yeah, I am, which is great. It's always good when I'm on holidays. I'm busier than ever, of course. And speaking of all the strange places where people are that listen to us, we were talking during the week about all those loyal listeners that we have in Kwinana.
We were, actually. We were doing a bit of... that's right, we were looking at the Google stats, weren't we?
We had to work out where Kwinana was. It's a suburb or a local government area in Western Australia. So hello to everyone in Kwinana.
Hello to our Kwinana listeners.
And we know you're out there.
Yes, we know who you are.
Yes.
Hello, Mark.
G'day. How are you?
Oh, very well, thank you very much. We're sort of, yes, keeping on. But do tell.
Oh, yes.
You've been... how's your week been?
Oh, I've been on holidays, and so much has happened since I was last year.
Everyone's on holidays.
Oh, yeah, it's been great. But,
the good news is I'm going on holidays very shortly, and you guys are going to do the show. Not next week, the week after.
It's the week after, is it? I was going to ask you tonight, though, how much preparation I've done for the next show.
And Dr. Ron, I'm going with him.
Oh, you want to what now? So it's going to be the Dr. Ron show with Graham.
It'll be you two over there. We'll be listening in South Australia somewhere.
Unless you drag him over to South Australia as well. It'll be very lonely in here.
Well, maybe you better get some guests in.
Maybe.
Oh, dear. All right. So anything interesting happening in the land of mobile telecommunications at the moment, Mark, that's worthy of mention at this early stage?
No, we'll get on to a few things later on, but prepaid on XG.
I heard about that.
Launched. Yep. So, I think that was... took a while for them to get it right, I think, and now they've launched it, which is good. I guess you didn't really need it. Doesn't matter which network you're with, but now you can get all those new facilities.
I think the stats counts up to about 400,000 subscribers, I think, now on NextG. So the network's starting to build.
It'll make a lot of people very happy having prepaid on NextG, especially if people find that an easier way to actually run their phones, run their accounts and their bills.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've got... I think there's quite a few more subscribers than that. I know I'm not allowed to give out numbers, but it's...
No, I just... That's what I was sort of reading in the mainstream the other day. So I must admit, I did hear Phil Burgess on one of the local radio stations talking, beating up the next G option, and his call dropped out in the middle of it. I thought that was really quite funny. Oh, dear. Anyway, it couldn't have happened to a nicer chap in a lot of respects. But speaking of broadband, we weren't really, but we are now. Dr. Ron, last week we were talking about what Senator Coonan came out and said.
It was a good show last week, by the way. I was listening.
Yeah, where were you?
At work.
At work?
Had the radio on in the car.
Had the tranny going.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was a good show.
Well, did you hear the bit about broadband and how Senator Coonan was having a go at the OECD and about how they generate the statistics to realise that we are in a bit of a backwater here in number 17 on the list?
Well, she decided now that... In the first instance, she said, 17, that's not too bad. Don't get worried about that. This was a couple of months ago, and now she's had a think about it and thought, that doesn't sound all the best, actually. Maybe we should just attack where the statistics have come from.
Oh, exactly.
Attack the credibility of the OECD.
This is exactly right. After slamming the OECD's finding on global broadband rankings as inaccurate and accusing the Labor Party of misleading the Australian public on its broadband adoption, has to get the left hook in there, as you know, we'll go two birds with the one stone here. IT Minister Senator Helen Coonan may have some pie to clean from her face after OECD spokesperson claimed the minister's department had been directly involved in the formulation of the findings she was criticising.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
That's embarrassing.
So you probably directed them to be part of that.
I find that most amusing. As Graham said last week on the program, maybe Senator Coonan should have other things to worry about. But really, I read it and I laughed. And I thought, my goodness.
If you look at the figures, there isn't actually a lot in 17th place, 16th, 15th, up to about 10 or 9. It's only a matter of... Instead of like 10 megabits per second on average, it might be 11.2 or 12.5 or something like that. But it's fairly close, the rankings. However, we are still behind.
Yeah. And I must admit, just personally speaking, I was having a chat to Lyd Davis in Palo Alto, in Silicon Valley, where it's all at. And she was having all sorts of problems with her internet over there. You know, they might be the land of the rich and plenty, but they're not the land of the very well connected, I don't think. Like, she was dropping in and out trying to upload some stuff to an FTP server just down the road from her. And, yeah, it was a bit frustrating, really. So I don't know whether the US has got anything to rave about, but I think Europe's the place to be for broadband, isn't it? Where Matthew is.
In Denmark.
Yeah, that's another thing, too. You were telling me, Matthew, who's one of our listeners in Denmark, who has been on the show from time to time, he was, what's this new mobile phone or this phone plan that he's got over there, which I think you were mentioning before. It made me nearly fall off my chair when you told me about
it. Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name of the company. Oh, it was going to get Matthew to do a little
this
story
for
us.
This is we should have here.
Yeah, he gets something like 6 or 8 cents per call to anywhere in the world, and it's untimed.
Now, that's got
to
be
a landline. So he can ring me on a landline from Denmark, and it cost him, I think it's 6 cents or 8 cents or something like that, untimed. And if I want to call him, even using Engine or a voice over IP type telephony provider.
Through a phone network as opposed to via the internet.
Well, either way, I'm still paying for a timed call. But he's got some incredible rates on this new company over there. Yeah, and they also give him a local telephone number as well, so he can give me like a Melbourne-based phone number to ring him, and it goes through to his computer.
It's got to be VoIP, then, really, doesn't
it? It is, but it's a great service. We've been using it over the last week or so.
Now, this highlights, I think, the bandwidth issue, really, isn't it? Because as telcos grow old, as we grow old, the bandwidth, which is the ability to carry data from point A to point B, is going to become free and cheap. If not, you know, it's just going to pale into insignificance. Our kids are going to grow up and say, you used to pay for bandwidth? What a joke. Now, do you think that the telcos, you know, whether they, whichever one it happens to be, where they're all focusing on the wrong thing these days, they should be focusing on providing content on broadband as opposed to fighting over what we're looking at the moment, just getting the cables in the street? It's an interesting dilemma, isn't it? So much so that there's been a bit of unease over the rural net plan too. You know, the G, what, Mark, you know,
G9.
I lose track of all these G's these days. There's the
T4. The T4 and the G9.
Yeah.
The G9 and all that sort of stuff. But concern is mounting among coalition backbenchers that the frontrunner for the $600 million regional broadband project, Optus, will not reach all rural areas expected when they back the fund as a condition for the support of the sale of Telstra. The highly secretive assessment of tenders for grants in its final stages and due to go to Cabinet next month. So that'll be interesting to see what Optus finally come up with. But it's very frustrating. Like, I'm not going to rant and rave about it tonight, but isn't it frustrating that no one knows what Telstra's got up their sleeve, what Next G... Mark? T11?
T4. And G9.
See, I rest my case. It's confusing, isn't it? And someone else joined T4 the other day, I think it was. They've got another member. I don't know whether they go to T4.5 now.
That's it. A few weeks ago, we had some sneaky Telstra news as well, Mark, about them trialling a new technology on their cable network. There's the VDSL. There's also on the cable network, though, there's DOCSIS 2 and DOCSIS 3 standards.
What is that?
Yeah.
Well, they're new...
Oh, this is trying to get faster
out of cable.
Out of cable,
yeah. It was leaked to the mainstream media that internally there was going to be a trial by Telstra staff of new hardware and faster broadband delivered via their cable network. So the new... Well, currently you can get up to about 17 megabits per second on their cable network. The new standard, DOCSIS 2, will actually give a lot faster than that, and then DOCSIS 3 much faster again, like well and truly over 100 megabits per second. So they're trialling that at the moment on the existing infrastructure. They're doing all this by stealth because we've been focused or distracted, if you like, about their tit-for-tat battle with the ACCC and everything else over the ADSL and the copper network. But behind the scenes, they've been doing a lot of research and development, I think, as to how they can get more out of their existing
Well, they
cable
need
network.
To, don't they?
Hmm.
Because wireless and DSL, I would have thought, are going to trump HFE, or the high-frequency cable, fairly quickly.
DOCSIS 3.0 will provide up to 150 megabits per second. That's not bad.
Do you think there's a future for cable, apart from television? Well, maybe even including television.
I think there is a future. There'll always be a place for it. It's a completely different infrastructure and a completely different network. It has to be managed as a totally different network. And this is probably where they run up against a lot of problems. They're trying to have a common base of applications and services that they can provide people, but there's lots of different types of infrastructure that have to be able to accommodate those different services.
Oh, watch this space, I guess, and see what develops. The US mobiles leave drivers standard. Sorry, stranded. I wish I could read tonight. It's been one of those days already. Nissan. This should be the odd spot, but we won't go there just yet. Nissan North America has warned has a warning for customers. Placing your electronic key too close to your mobile phone could leave you stranded. Anyone heard anything about this?
Yeah, go on. Yeah, I heard about this.
The automaker is asking customers driving new models of two of its flagship sedans to keep their car keys and mobile handset at least an inch apart to avoid disabling the intelligent keys. Mobile phones kept near Nissan's iKeys. Why does everyone call everything iThis and iThat? iKey, the wireless device designed is to allow drivers to enter and start their cars at the push of a button. Can erase the electronic codes of the keys, rendering them unable to unlock or start their cars.
That shouldn't happen these days. Well, it just shouldn't happen anymore. I mean, people have to test their devices to be compatible with other devices, and now the standards, I can't believe it's actually got to market, and it's, you know, possible it could happen.
Did you hear about that urban myth where if you...
Yes, I did.
Okay, moving on.
Should we get on to it?
If you hold the remote control or the remote opener for your car up to a mobile phone and you make a mobile phone call and you go into the next room and I'll go out the front to my car and I'll hold the mobile phone up near the car and you press my key opener, then you can open my door over the mobile phone call.
That's right. It was an urban myth. Exactly.
I thought you meant to say no. It was true. It was.
It's almost true. Did you? You probably saw the same thing I did. I was watching it today, actually, on the net.
Yeah.
And that's the urban myth is that if you lock your keys in your car, you can ring your wife and get the spare set, and she can put that close to the phone. And
that's
while
right.
She's
that's right.
Calling you, and you put the phone close to the door lock, and it opens the door.
I don't recommend people lock their keys in the car deliberately.
There's a pig flying in the back of the
street. Yeah. Well, it's nearly truthful, actually. Just be careful, because what they were showing on this thing I saw, it was on the ABC, actually, on TV.
Right.
Was that even though that doesn't work, it's obviously false. They are actually going to build in the devices that will unlock doors into your mobile phone. So instead of having a key that unlocks it, you'll just have your mobile phone. It'll be another thing in your mobile phone that you'll be able to push, and it'll obviously open your garage door, and it'll be able to unlock your car and whatever else you do with those very short-range devices.
If you've got any mobile phone or key ring type urban myth stories...
Feedback.
At techtalkradio.com.au.
In fact, you could build it into TV Be Gone, couldn't you? Into your mobile phone.
Oh, dear.
Press a shortcut on your mobile phone or televisions turn off that are within range. That's a plan.
That's a doozy, isn't it? Yeah. You can take out the whole street if you want.
They've got infrared ports already.
Well, they do, yeah.
No worries.
Senator Coonan launched the other day the Do Not Call register.
She's getting good value for money out of Do Not Call. She's launching it in every state.
It starts in a couple of days. If hasn't already, depending on where you're listening to us.
She's launching it for internet and telephone registration every state. She's going to get about 14 or 15 launches out of this.
Is it? Oh, that's good. Good leading up to the election.
That's great.
Press release today, another one out of the Coonan office, as they do come thick and fast at this time leading up to the election.
Year.
Yeah, exactly. The Minister for Communications and all that stuff, Senator, said today, she warned consumers about potential unscrupulous door-knocking scams where people were asked for money in return for being listed on the Do Not Call register.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
The scam for the scammers. It's not bad, really, is it? So if someone knocks on your door and says, hey, sign up, what do?
This is a very old scam where people actually offer to provide you with a service that is in itself free, but you don't know about it, and they offer to do it on your behalf and charge you money for it.
Well, on the face of it, it's a fairly appealing sort of deal, isn't it? You don't want to be disturbed by telemarketers. We can fix that for the price of $10 or something.
Yeah, one-off fee.
Yeah, and if they get 10 people in the street, there's $100. It's like those opportunistic people that like washing your window and then thrust their hand in through the window of your car expecting some gold shekels.
It's illegal. Tell them to go away or you call the police.
Is it illegal?
Absolutely it is.
Oh, well, there you go. So window washers, be warned. You've heard it here on Tech Talk Radio. Oh, dear. Now, another thing, too, before we go to the break, Symantec, you know that organisation?
Yes.
Yes. Millions of Chinese computers may have been paralysed by a faulty antivirus update from Symantec.
Oh, no.
The world's largest security software provider made in a monumental boo-boo during the week. An automatic update to the Chinese version of Norton antivirus software, so relax if you're not using the Chinese version, was sent out last Friday, identified two critical files of the Microsoft XP operating system and deleted them.
I was going to mention
there's another odd spot, really, isn't it? Yeah.
So did it only happen to the legit copies? So all the rest, yeah, so 99.9999% are okay?
Look, well, I don't know about whether legit copies, but if it was the Chinese or the Mandarin version, I guess, it would just say, hey, you don't need this file. It's the Windows.exe file.
I was going to mention to you that
delete it.
TechTalkRadio.cn appeared to be down, but that will explain it.
Yeah.
If you go to your browser and type that in, nothing will come back to you. That's why.
All right. Another interesting thing that came out this week, just down the road from us, is the township, the suburb of Box Hill. For people that have decided to use the Westpac ATM down the road, there's been a little scamming device put on the top
of
it. Oh, no. I don't know whether you heard about this. But
so it collects your cash as it comes out? Is that what it does? Yeah.
So someone had put a little, thing. I don't know how to describe it apart from a thing. As you put the card in, it tries to read the barcode on the back of your credit card or whatever FPOS card that you put in.
Yep.
And it then stores it in its own memory device for when, unscrupulous Joe Blog comes past, whistling his tune. Well, there's no one there. I'll just whip it off and off they go. So they then have all your account details.
Which bank was it, Andrew?
Westpac.
Ooh.
Westpac?
A very large bank.
No, Westpac.
No, Westpac. Very large bank in Australia.
They need the PIN number as well?
Well, yes. I don't know how they get the PIN number. Maybe there's some form of recording device into it as well. Yeah. But Westpac, as a result, blocked 900 of its customers' cards after the skimming device was found. And the boss reckoned they lost around about, just short of 100 grand out of the skimming process, and they tracked it down, and they're currently working with authorities in Canada.
To drop in the ocean for Westpac, however, it'd be an extreme inconvenience for the customers, wouldn't it, having their cards blocked and having to get the money recredited to their accounts?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Why with the banking.
Why are they working with the authorities in Canada?
Well, that's where apparently the transfers were occurring.
Ah, okay.
So someone had done the deed here, and
you
obviously
think maybe Victoria Police might be able to help there? Yeah.
Well, who knows? It's in the IT world of things, and I guess your average member would probably, what do we do? Lodge it? It needs to go to the federal offices and things like that.
You want to see the guy who actually put it there and what he looks like.
And another thing just before we go to the break, spam messages are increasing. Did I have to tell you that?
No.
It's ferocious out there at the moment. The existing spam is just becoming more and more and more, and so much so that Americans are accepting this as a fact of life. 37% of US email users say they're getting more junk in their personal email accounts, and 29% said an increase in their work account. About half say that they've not noticed any change, but the spam at the moment, there's some new drugs out there. I don't know. Have you seen something?
I get less spam now than I did 3 months ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but you're with Telstra. They just don't deliver, do they?
Yeah, I think that's what happens. It just
because Telstra has, I think Telstra has a spam filter. And I could be wrong here. I stand corrected. But
I believe they do. And I'm not paying for their spam filter. I'm not using one of the ones that they offer as a service. I've just got nothing. And there's been nothing in my junk email and nothing in my inbox, really. Maybe one or two a week.
It's a bit like investment in their bandwidth, really. If they block one of the, the spam as it comes in, it's going to save them hundreds of thousands of kilobits, megabits of bandwidth, so that it's not metered or anything like that. So, but spam. Are you finding your spam box filling up fast, or do you just go delete, 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 and don't even look at it?
I probably get between, 50, 60, 70 messages, spam messages a day, I guess, into my mailbox. It goes into a spam folder, and I just delete it once every couple of weeks. I think email is just going to die in the next few years. 5 years, 10 years' time, I won't be using email. It will become unusable. I reckon in the way that news groups now have become completely unusable, we'll just migrate to something else. There'll be another technology like instant messaging, some form of instant communication that everyone will start using over email, because it's just becoming so expensive, so difficult to maintain, and so awkward to try and filter out legitimate messages from
spam. Do you find that you lose messages from any of your bona fide senders?
Rarely. Sometimes I do, but usually the defences I've got in place work fairly well. But I just think that the amount of traffic, like 90% of the spam traffic in the world, whatever it is unsolicited. It's just costing people so much in terms of time and money and everything else, and technology.
I've got one here.
Exactly.
Las Vegas Casino.
Yeah.
$500 for it.
All I did was say feedback at techtalkradio.com.au 5 minutes ago, and the Las Vegas Casino is emailing us already.
Exactly. Yeah, listening to us on the pod.
I'm sure they are. We'll just end up moving on to another communications medium, I think.
I reckon we'll keep it. I don't think you can get rid of email now. It's just too important to everyone, and I think everyone will end up with whitelists or something like that, so you'll only get emails from people you know.
Or else we have to pay an ISP or some big organisation.
Something has to happen. There has to be a very large, very significant change in the way in the protocol, either by paying, like you're saying, Andrew, with some sort of registration
company
process.
Company XYZ is going to start up and say, we will guarantee you spam-free emails if you join up and sign, put your mail server on our box or something like that.
In a similar way that VeriSign, for example, issues certificates for secure web browsing. Maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Did you know that Star Wars turned 30?
I did. Heard that one. Isn't that great?
That's great.
30 years ago.
Do you remember what you were doing 30 years ago? You're probably sitting in the cinema and you're probably,
I was watching Star
probably
Wars.
In the teenage years going, wow, look at this. Isn't this great?
I remember it was a friend down the, a neighbour's birthday party down the road and they were all going to see it and my mum and dad wouldn't let me go.
Why not?
Oh, I don't know. I think I was too young.
To see Darth Vader and Luke and all that?
It was probably PG and I was, what, 7 or 8 years old?
I know. It was NRC. Do you remember that rating? Not recommended for children.
Yeah,
NRC.
And I was probably 8 years old and that was not recommended.
Yeah, we didn't have PGs or M's or anything like that back in those days, did we? I can't remember what the other ones were. But yes, it's been 30 years and Adam Turner took a look at the trilogy, or the story, actually. There's two trilogies now, isn't there? That is Star Wars. So he put his feet up on the couch, whacked the DVD in and off he went.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Actually, it was 30 years ago on Friday that the Star Wars saga hit the big screen. But it still manages to capture our imagination like few other sci-fi space operas. Luke, Leia, Obi-Wan, Han, Chewie have raked in around $20 billion, making it one of the most successful franchises of all time. Who doesn't own a Star Wars action figure or a replica lightsaber, even if it's buried in the toy box at Mum's, waiting for another generation to discover the Force? Thirty years later, the original Star Wars is still an enjoyable ride, even with all those annoying extra special effects and scenes George Lucas added a few years ago to try and spruce it up a bit. I love some of the primitive special effects. Next time you're watching Luke and friends run around the Death Star, pay attention to the fact that nobody seems to move when the doors slide up and down. Watch closely, and it's obvious that everyone was told to freeze while some poor stagehand wound the doors up and down, with the footage sped up later and a sound effect dropped over the top. Debate still rages over which is the best Star Wars film. For my money, it would have to be The Empire Strikes Back. It's the dark, brooding movie with the wonderful imagery of Dagobah, where Luke enters the tree and slays Darth Vader, only to see his own face behind the mask. Deep. Very deep. Luke loses his hand, Han gets encased in carbonite, all looks lost. I went to see it in the cinemas in Russell Street with my older cousins, and even though I was only 6, I still remember it. After Empire Strikes Back, it was all downhill. The franchise hit a new low with The Phantom Menace and Jar Jar Binks. The fact he's Cartman from South Park's favourite character really says it all. Sadly, George Lucas lost the plot. I mean, if R2-D2 really had rockets in his feet, how come he never used them again? There's plenty of silly moments to pick on, but we still hung in there, waiting to see that fateful moment when Anakin became Darth. 6 movies on, the Star Wars saga would appear to be told, but the merchandise rights still live on. Last week, Activision and LucasArts released LEGO Star Wars The Complete Saga, a collection of console games allowing people to play through the events of all 6 Star Wars movies as LEGO men. I felt a great disturbance in the Force when I heard about it, as if millions of old-school Star Wars fans cried out in terror, and then were suddenly silent. When 900 years old you are, shift merchandising so good you will not.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Lego on the PS, what'd you say, PS2, 3, 4, what have you got now?
Well, funny you should ask. Adam was getting stuck into the Lego Star Wars then, wasn't he?
He was.
I've got it on the PS2.
Yeah, my son's now got it on the Nintendo DS. He's been hanging out for it. He's saving his pocket money for it.
Such a great game.
Has he got the Lego version or not? So.
Yeah, it's Lego men who are Star Wars characters running around the ship, I think.
You've got to complete the Star Wars level. Yeah, it's fantastic. And when you shoot...
He'll send us an email now. You watch.
If you shoot like a stormtrooper, then it explodes into all its little Lego pieces.
Oh, a bit like our mixing desk did when the lightsaber fired up before.
Yes.
Nearly blew our ears off.
Apologies.
Lots of level, didn't we?
We did indeed. So, moving on, the Shoutcast servers are all working well. Thank you to Jeff Dudley and Wynn Media. They're coming in, so you're probably listening to us live on the stream tonight.
Thanks, Jeff. And also, as Alan recently pointed out, for OS X users, the Shoutcast stream being MP3 is also an iTunes.
He was dark on you last week.
He was, because I forgot it. Oh, I'm sorry, everybody. I was at work. I was working an afternoon shift, and I had a thousand things on my mind. I didn't press the Shoutcast button. But if you're an iTunes listener, you can click on the Shoutcast stream. So thanks, Alan, for letting us know that. That's absolutely correct.
Now, Frapper's going hot and strong too, you were saying before.
Frapper's going very well.
This is where you can stick a pin in the map and show us where you are.
Exactly right. And also there's some new forum users, forum.techtalkradio.com.au. Hello to Chris Holiday, and hello to DimDim1987, who have registered in the last couple of weeks.
DimDim. So go along there and register, because we're like, you'll probably get a mention like that. Dr. Ron does sort of collect all those email addresses and say g'day.
Definitely, so. We keep an eye on the user list, and the forum's a great place to go to discuss topical items that you hear about on the show.
Now, speaking of topical items, you've invested in some new mobile technology, I've seen too. You've bought a new toy in tonight just to show us. Dr. Ron is the proud owner of a new baby mobile device.
It's a Sony Ericsson W850i.
Yeah, and what was your buying criteria on the device?
The buying criteria has got absolutely nothing to do with what I ended up getting, Andrew, unfortunately.
That's why I asked the question, because what you wanted is what no one could provide for you.
I was talking to Andrew a few weeks before I got it, and I said, all I want is an HSDPA handset, and I want it to have Wi-Fi, I want it to have Bluetooth, and I want it to be able to take photos, and it was too hard. No, there's nothing out there
Jazz Jam didn't suit. It does all those things. Or the Zopod, if you want to go with three network.
You can knock yourself out with a Jazz Jam in your ear. Oh, poof, sorry.
The Zopod was a bit smaller. You could have gone with that. You're like the three network.
You're right, Mark. Absolutely right. I could have gone with those. I was looking at plans that actually were similar to the one I was already on. As a compromise, I decided, look, maybe I don't need the Wi-Fi. I went for the Sony Ericsson Walkman phone. It's a great little unit. It's performing very well. Two strange things, though. One, I had to take the first handset back because the camera didn't work.
Okay. Well, these things happen.
And three, were very good about it. They said, we're extremely sorry. Here, have a brand new handset.
That's really good in this day and age. You don't want these sort of...
Oh, you have to take it back to Sony Ericsson.
Yes, one of the major brand suppliers probably would have said, take it to the service agent.
No, three were tremendous. They just handed me a brand new handset. And it was interesting, if anyone else has had the same problem, when you try to access the camera, you got a message on the display which said, another application already has the camera in use, please close this and try again. But there was nothing running, and I'd done a master reset and still no joy. I Googled it, the error message, and a lot of people are having this problem. And
you weren't Robinson Crusoe.
I wasn't, and there's no easy answer for it on any of the forums. The second strange thing to comment about the phone is there's no little flashing LED on it to tell you that it's turned on.
And the screen goes black.
And the screen goes...
There's a screensaver mode.
Exactly. Like, usually I'm accustomed to having a little green blinking LED.
Just something to say
the phone's switched on, but this doesn't have one. Now, there is an LED there, but nothing happens. So it might be the branding. Might be 3's branding of the phone has got that disabled.
One thing I have noticed, my wife was also the proud owner of some new technology in the form of a new handset the other day as well, similar to the one that I've got. Now, I had mine unlocked from the network. You can actually ask them to do that these days, and normally they do, and they did on this occasion. Can I just say that the boot-up time and the functionality of the phone sped up no end once the phone had actually been unlocked from the carrier's network. So
Not loading a lot of settings which, for day-to-day use, are not necessary, all those themes and wallpapers and things like that.
It's very frustrating. But now she's got one of these picture cameras, So I get MMS pictures every 5 minutes of the kids. But no, she's a user of technology. She blatantly comes out and says, I don't want to know how it works. I just want to know how to use it and have fun with it.
There's a feature in this which, when you take a photo, it says send to recipient via email or Bluetooth.
That's what she's discovered.
And there's a menu option that says send to blog.
Oh, really?
Blog this photo. I have to work out
so you can send
how to operate
new,
that.
Well, that's another thing. The new Dr. Blog Ron.
There is a new Dr. Ron Blog.
I'm back now.
We'll talk about this a little bit later when we discuss WordPress, but I did a science experiment all in the name of Tech Talk Radio technology.
Because we're going to talk blogs a little bit later. In fact, fairly shortly, actually, according to the rundown, because Lyd had a chat to WordPress's guru over there.
And it's happy birthday for WordPress.
Happy birthday. They got 4 years old, apparently. So they've been at it for a while, but you brazenly moved into the blog world and downloaded your own software and now have your own WordPress blog running on your server.
That's exactly right. Now, for those of you that don't know what a blog is, it's a weblog. It's the online diary where people can write comments and narratives and things like that. I'm sure most people listen to
blogging.
Blogging's
really popular these days. It's a bit of an influential site, and Google treats it very well.
Google loves them.
Yes. I'm actually off to the Google Developers Day in the next couple of days in Sydney, so I'll be reporting back from that. I might even take the microphone with me. I might get some interviews. You never know. So the Google Developers Day coming up shortly. But blogs, yes, very important. Do you blog at all, Mark? Or do you know anyone who does?
I have a blog, but I don't regularly blog. In fact, it was one of those things that it was announced, so I set mine up, so I had it. And the whole purpose of it was to be able to send photos and put them on the net easy for friends and family to look at.
And while you're travelling and things
while
like
I'm
that.
While I'm travelling, yep. And I went to do it with my phone while I was on holidays last week to do it, but they have to actually set it up manually. I'm no longer going to have that phone number, so I'm just sort of waiting a week until change phone numbers over, and then I'll set that up, and I'll be able to send it off. I think I've only got about 10 megabyte limit, but, you know, small photos, so I'll get quite a few on there.
Oh, good. Well, I set out to do a couple of science experiments with this. One of the things I wanted to do was to map my own domain name to a blog. I knew that it could be done. I wanted to find out the best way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I first started out with Blogspot. That's a very popular one.
Yeah. And you were shot down in flames by Lydia.
Well, I was. I
saw that email. But,
oh, ouch. Yeah, we're glad I'm not the recipient of that one. Oh, hang on a minute, I am. That's exactly right. She said, why don't I have a blog, Dr. Ron? And I said, yeah, well, I need to get on to
it. I was actually recording a phone interview for her the other day when she was telling me, and I said, no, I'm transcribing that. Here, have an MP3 file, Dr. Ron.
That's right. Look, I could do what I wanted to do with Blogspot, but there were some technical limitations. And also, I could do what I wanted to do with WordPress, if you had a WordPress.com.
Yep.
But there were costs involved. So Lyd said to me, why don't you just download WordPress and host your own? And I said, what the? What, you can download WordPress and run your own blog server? And she said, duh. And I said, oh, I had no idea. So I went to WordPress.org,
mm-hmm.
downloaded my own WordPress software, and I've installed that on a server. So now I can run my own blog server, if you like.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. So you can blog for anyone. You can set up accounts and do all that sort of stuff.
Exactly.
And it's a bit more user-friendly, I believe, too.
WordPress is tremendous. It is so flexible and so powerful, and there's plugins for it as well.
Well, that's a good promo for a segment coming up after the following break.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Your DHS has one as well?
Pardon me?
Yeah. I saw your email during the week.
Oh, don't go there.
DHS, yes, that's right.
Oh, yeah, right,
yes. Check the forum.
The ABC, you know the ABC, the government broadcaster, they have an island on Second Life.
Still?
Still, well, yes.
Again?
Still.
After it was razed to the ground?
Yeah, some unscrupulous types came in and absolutely demolished the ABC site during the week. It was leading edge. Telstra have got one too. I don't think they've worked out how to do Telstra's yet, probably because for whatever reason. But no, the ABC's prized virtual reality island on the game Second Life was devastated, they said.
What was the relevance, just quickly? The tower was left behind and untouched. Was there any relevance to that with the, you know?
I don't know, but if you have a look at our website, go to techtalkradio.com.au right now, and on the right-hand side, before I move it, it'll be on the left-hand side maybe after you listen to this, you'll see the before and after shots of what Second Life ABC's variety or version looks like before it got trashed.
Okay.
So it's
how much of taxpayers' time and money and is wasted on maintaining this thing?
Well, is it a waste or what? It's the third most popular site in Second Life, apparently. The third most visited commercial site online on the online game.
But so what? What can you do there?
6 million members globally.
You can listen?
Yes, you can.
But why don't...
You can go into the lounge and chat to people. It's a meeting place. It's like going to the pub, Dr. Ron. Come on, get in with this new generation.
I don't understand.
We're now advertising to a global audience, aren't you, that can now listen to the ABC... because they wouldn't have known it existed before.
But what about the ABC's website and the streaming services?
Those people overseas wouldn't know what the ABC in Australia was. So now that there's a spot where these people from all around the world go,
they'll go, what's this funny-looking scorched island in the middle of Second Life? Oh, come on.
No. Well, I believe they did a Linden Labs, who's the owner of Second Life, actually did a restore off their database for them.
And
actually,
it took a few hours, didn't it? And they were back on air again.
They rebuilt it very quickly.
It's quite interesting. Technically, they can restore sections of Second Life. Obviously.
Yeah, they must do a snapshot every 6 hours or something and store
their
it
files,
all.
Their whole memory and find out who did it and sort of thing.
They'll probably find IP addresses and there'll be some, they'll set Red Simons around or something like that. Craig Preston, head of the technology for the ABC Innovation, said only the digital transmission tower was left standing on the island, which cost the ABC tens of thousands of dollars to create.
There you go.
Taxpayers' money. That's 8 cents a day.
What a
half
waste.
A lot of people's 8 cents a day went into building the second line. Why do you think it's a waste, Dr. Ron?
I can't see the
You're shaking
point.
Your head going...
If it's something that people want to do as a bit of fun in their own time with their own money, then good luck. But a government agency spending money on doing something in Second Life, I can't see the point. Mm. It's lost on me.
You should say the same thing for why are they on air,
Yeah, well, we're going interesting grounds there. Let's move on, shall we? It's time for a cup of coffee, so we're going to take a break and we'll be back very shortly, and we're going to talk about Nigerian scammers having a field day in Queensland.
Nice.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work.
Poor Carly.
The relative,
can't
washing
be Charlie
car.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to the panel. Andrew McComb here with Dr. Ron and Mark Diggins this evening. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're contactable on the internet. Funnily enough, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Mark. Oh, dear, so it's my fault. Wrong fader. Let's do that again. Mark.
No, we'll get onto it later. We'll be right.
Oh, okay, sorry. Right, a pregnant pause there.
I've thrown you there, haven't I?
Absolutely. We're going to talk a little bit about Nigerian scammers. Now, Dr. Ryan, you've talked about 419 scams and all those sort of things in the course of time.
I had a very pleasant discussion with a 419 scammer for some months, and I posted all our conversations on the forum.
For those of you who don't know and who are new to the internet, you don't believe everything you read and see and hear on the internet, not to mention in the emails that some people send to you. Nigerians are notorious for sending these things saying, I'm the relationship manager for such and such, and anyway, sob story inserted here. Apparently, Queenslanders are being done on these things more so than any other state in Australia. Even after being robbed of their life savings, the victims of Nigerian email scams refuse to believe that they've been duped by the fraudsters. In Queensland alone, an estimated $500,000 per month is funneled out of the country, according to Detective Acting Superintendent Brian Hay of the Queensland Police. That's a lot of money.
It's a ridiculous amount of money, isn't
Why?
It?
Why? People, I would have thought people, regardless of where you live, anywhere in the world, would know better these days.
If it sounds too good to be true, then it nearly always is. What these people do is they say to you, for whatever reason, as Andrew said, insert sob story here, however, I can send you 5 million euros, but because I need an administrative they call advance fee scams, because they say all I need in advance is a small fee to unlock the money. All I need you to do is just to send me $500, $1,000, that's all I need, wire it to this bank account, and then I can transfer you the $1 million. And people say, sounds like a plan. Where do I send the money to?
So just recap, tell us about the stringing out process that you did with this chap. Can you tell us much about it?
Well, again, this was a science experiment, all in the name of entertaining and informing people. And I replied. I didn't use a real email address. I didn't use any real credentials. But I replied and I said, hey, sounds like a plan. Where can I send my money? and I managed to string him out for weeks and weeks and weeks, I think. And we had, I sent him a photocopy of a pretend passport. I think I called myself Monica Lewinsky. And I sent a passport with Monica Lewinsky's photograph and said, yes, please, can you order me my plane ticket?
So, this is identity theft coming from you?
Oh, no, let's not go there. yes, can you book the plane tickets, please, because I'll come over and I'll hand deliver the money to you. And he said, yep, sounds great, and we had everything organised. And, yes, then I just started to put the hard word on him about, you know, where was did the money have to get wired to, and he actually gave me some bank account details.
And
yes, these were all referred to the appropriate authorities. So, yes.
Oh, very good. So, I must admit, they still do come in on a semi-regular basis. I get one. You probably don't get any because of your...
I don't see them very often.
No, I think I've seen once every sort of other day that sort of has dwindled off now to being once every sort of 2 months or something like that for the old Nigerian
scammer. But they're still around. They're still successful,
unfortunately. Yeah, beware in Queensland. The average loss a year ago out of Queensland was apparently $300,000, and it's increased to $500,000 per month and increasing all the time, according to the police.
That's a lot of money.
Quick one for you.
Yeah.
The Chaser podcast, Ashley Vodcast.
Video podcast.
I'm a big fan of The Chaser, okay. I might ask. ABC TV?
Yeah, we like it in here.
We like ABC.
Yep. I tried it on my Next G phone the other day.
Oh, yep.
And the answer came back, sorry, can't access this from outside Australia. Now, would that be the ABC saying that, or is it...
We had a listener send something like that.
Any idea, guys?
What usually happens is that they will look at your IP address and... Countries are often assigned ranges of IP addresses. Now, Graham had this problem as well when he signed up to an internet service provider, which was a
Dodgy Brothers Inc.
Well, it was Graham. It was a very new ISP,
okay.
And they had secured a range of IP addresses.
He was an Indian, according to his IP address.
Exactly right. Yeah. And according to the International Convention for the range of IP addresses, his was in India. So whenever he went to Google, it would preload the Google.India page.
Yes.
And so it might be something like that, Mark. Potentially the... Now, you're doing it over Next G, is that right?
That's right.
So Telstra may be using an IP address, which is a little bit left of field.
Yeah, it could come from the States or something.
Exactly right. And
like
then...
Com.
That's right. And when it finds its way from your phone through Telstra to the ABC is looking at the address and saying... That's an international address, and the content's not available to you.
How do you know which end it is? How do you know that it's not the ABC actually getting it wrong and haven't got all the ranges in
Australia? Why don't you load up on your Next G phone a website called MyIP, I think it is, myip.com,
okay.
And it'll tell you what the IP address is, and if it looks a bit odd, chances are that the carrier is... bought a new range which isn't in one of the tables yet.
Right,
so
I'll try that during the break and I'll give you a look at it.
Try that. If it looks like a perfectly acceptable address, then it could be the ABC.
It might be yourip.com. It's one of those sort of things, but we'll find it and report back.
Okay.
Let's talk about blogging because we're about to go and have a listen to Lid. Lid had a chat to Matt Mullingsworth. I might have had the name wrong there. But Matt, based out of San Francisco, is the... a man who started WordPress, which is the software that Dr. Ron was talking about, and it allows you to blog. Now, blogging is a new trend. When I say new trend, it's probably 12 months on, maybe a bit more than that, but it really is a place for free speech. You can get up there and just vent. You can tell people about things. You can sell your wares. You can do anything you like on a blog.
Share photos and other content.
Influential is the category for blogging. It means that what you say can influence people. People read your blog and you go, well, Dr. Ron reckons this, so you've influenced people.
Indeed.
And as a result, Google thinks highly of it and all that sort of stuff. So a lot of countries have different laws about blogs and what can and can't be seen because of censorship. Fortunately, we're on the right side of censorship over here. I don't think we suffer from any forms of blocking. But the United Arab Emirates, for example, they do a lot of that sort of thing, and so too does China. Now, China has just recently backed down from a plan to require bloggers to use their real names when they register for web blogs.
Oh.
Following an outcry over the proposal from their local internet industry. Instead, the government would promote a self-discipline code that would encourage but not mandate bloggers to register under their own names. That's an interesting concept, really, isn't it? Because if you were behind a regime which was not as free and as liberating as what we are, getting up there and getting on your soapbox may have long-term ramifications. So why would you use your real name?
This is exactly right. In countries like the UAE and China, it's law, isn't it? They've got government firewalls. And
because they don't like people talking about their government unduly or unnecessarily, so it's called censorship. But anyway, let's find out a little bit about blogging. It's a wonderful sort of technology. Everyone should have a bit of a bash at it. There's nothing harmful about it.
And Lid is an expert.
Lid's an expert. She's actually taking questions at the moment over there. If you want to, even if you don't know the first thing about blogging, log on to her site, blogwell.wordpress.com, and you can ask her questions and things like that. But here she is. She had a chat. She's down. She took the Adderall down to Pier 39, I believe, in the sunny...
if you don't mind.
In the bay there.
Very
of,
sophisticated.
San Francisco, yes. Unfortunately, I couldn't get all of the interview there, and I will put it all up on the website, and there was a ferry that went past that just blew me out of the water. So, Liv, here is the slightly shorter version, but you can grab the whole part off the website. So off to San Francisco we go.
One of the things I've noticed is a lot of people get confused between WordPress.org and WordPress.com.
WordPress.org was first, and it's basically software for more technically able people who can download and install PHP scripts, set up a database. It's sort of more of the power tool. Mm-hmm. And what we did was, WordPress was really successful, and it got great adoption. It was seeing huge growth, but we felt like the audience was naturally limited because there's only so many people who are going to know or care what a database is. So we created a hosted version called WordPress.com to sort of try and open up the what we thought was good stuff, the core of WordPress, to just a wider audience, people who could just come, give us their email, and just have an account within a minute.
That's the nice thing about .com, mm-hmm. because I've actually sent people there saying, well, just do it, because you know it takes 5 minutes to set up, really.
Yeah.
And they don't realize how easy it is, you know, comparably, when you look at email and stuff.
Oh, totally.
It's so easy. They may as well just be doing that, putting their photo, you know, their photos or their grandkids, whatever it is. But in terms of blogging, what are you seeing to be a trend?
There's been some noise lately about the growth of blogging slowing down, and we've been seeing quite the opposite. I think what might be happening is that the biggest change that's going to happen over the next 5 to 10 years is now a generation that grew up publishing online. And so products that are hyper-popular, like MySpace or YouTube or something like that, are really just the training wheels. And so they'll always be popular. But what we're seeing is that people start with those and they eventually want something more sophisticated. Just like the increase of $100 cameras at Walmart has also increased the digital SLR market, sort of the upper end. And we tend to be an upper end brand and an upper end product. So it's a little bit more investment in terms of time, but that you need to, it's sort of a natural graduation for most folks who are serious about publishing.
Because you can use it two ways. You can use it as a business, obviously, and then you can use it just as a family.
Yeah,
sort of.
We see all ends of the spectrum. Like, we just saw O'Malley, who, that's his full-time job, and it's a company, you know, I don't know how many people, 10 people, just using WordPress and blogging and publishing. This is something that would have taken a $2 million content management system before, and now you can get it for free. Personal blogs are, I think, where the medium really shines, where you have just a single, authentic voice talking about what matters to them. And it might be disjointed, it might go from, you know, baseball to broadband to football. It's still about that person. And exposing those primary sources is, I think, going to transform media. Not in the short term, but in the long term.
One of the things that you mentioned, which I really like, is it's not just one or two guys hacking on something alone. Mm-hmm. It's dozens of people from across the world coming together because it's a shared passion.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Well, it started with one or two guys, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But WordPress, especially in the beginning, was as much about the sort of philosophy behind it as it was about the code. People don't care about tools.
Mm-hmm.
WordPress, for all its popularity and how much I like it, doesn't matter at all because it's just it's a pickaxe, it's a canvas or a paintbrush. What's important is what people are creating with it. And I think there's a trend for, especially software makers, such as myself, to attach too much self-importance to where the tool is and how it works. And WordPress is really, its goal is to be invisible. Its goal is to get out of the way as much as possible and just allow people to do what they really want to do, which is communicate, which is to blog, which is to publish, which is to talk to their friends, to not get spammed. These are all sort of the core thing that people want to do. And WordPress is just a step on the way. And the less friction it can introduce into the process, the more people are going to be successful in publishing online.
You started it, obviously, two guys, you were saying, you being one.
Uh-huh. WordPress is actually based on previous open source software called V2. That project was actually abandoned. But because it was open source, people took the code and continued developing it. And there's what was called forks or branches, where people sort of took the code base and made their own project from it. And there were actually a lot at the time. WordPress was just one of several. But what we did was, I was blogging about it, and I had very limited coding experience at the time. But what I tried to do was consolidate all the people who were doing their own projects and sort of bring them around a common goal, which is to create an easier, more elegant, and faster blogging experience. And that was that sort of goal, that sort of philosophy, attracted some great people. And so we were able to put a good product out there. With WordPress.org, you can do anything.
Yeah.
You can download any plugin. You can expand how the system works. You can turn it into a CMS versus a blogging engine. You can make it a podcasting engine. There are very few limits. And the sort of aftermarket community is huge. It's like people like to tweak their cars or Pimp My Ride. There's a Pimp My Blog movement. And there's thousands of plugins and themes available, this whole aftermarket. And that's really cool. The reason we created the .com version, the more commercial hosted version, was just that we saw there was something. There was sort of a Pareto rule where 80% of the stuff we could do with about 20% of the functionality.
Wow.
So we could sort of break that down and make the simplest, fastest, yet more limited version of the software open it up to a wider audience. But fundamentally, it's the same software. So if someone starts with WordPress.com and decides I want some more flexibility, they can use the exact same software on their own site. And so there's no sort of lock-in there. The core things that we do and where we succeed as a company is when we make our users happy, right? So users are happy when they get more comments, when they get more hits. Search engine optimization is a big part of that.
Absolutely.
So what we're lucky at is that we're able to do search engine optimization across now a million blogs and see the effects on a macro level. So like when I was just running my own blog, I would tweak things all the time.
Yeah.
But I only get 10 to 20,000 hits a day at most.
Only.
And that's small in terms of the internet. But even with that's large for a blog, maybe because we have so many blogs, we can experiment.
Yeah.
So for example, you mentioned descriptions.
Yeah.
We experiment with descriptions, and we found search engine traffic actually went down. I can't tell you why. Yeah. I just know scientifically, without a doubt, it did.
Another comment that you published was the state of the art semantic personal publishing platform. It was a term you used, and I thought it's interesting because people don't even realize what.
It's a little geeky.
It is. That's okay. I get what you're saying, but it's just tricky because semantic, you know, the more meaningful web, you know, we're getting there, and what do you see it as?
Well, so if you break that down, semantic, we pay a lot of attention to the quality of code and sort of the metadata. Personal, it's best for people who are blogging with themselves. It's probably not, if you're a 200-person media organization that needs workflow and approval and things, it's probably not the right thing for you. Publishing, you know, fundamentally what we're doing is putting things out there on the web. And platform, it's sort of a jumping point. WordPress, out of the box, does some things very well, but there's thousands of other things it can do with plugins and themes. And that's where I think it's really more of a platform, just like a Windows or a, you know, Linux might be. That what people build on top of it is far more interesting than the platform itself.
In terms of business blogging, I know a lot of people are now doing it to raise their profile, to raise their, you know, the search engine reputation management also, because, you know, if you're not there, it's one way, I suppose, of getting into a search engine.
I think businesses are realizing that there's a conversation happening out there about them. Whether they're participating in it or not is really up to them. And a business without a blog 5 years from now will be as weird as a business without an email address today or a website today. So, you know, I don't think that's going to happen overnight, and businesses aren't going to change. But it's definitely a trend that I think is underscoring the good businesses are already doing it. Microsoft is one of the pioneers of all that.
Yeah.
I think they were really led the way for a lot of folks, where they basically opened it up to all their employees and said, say what you want, you know.
Yep.
We have existing processes for dealing with people who curse or insult customers or something. We don't need to recreate that and control everything that goes out on the web. And so they have thousands of blogs, and they have folks like Robert Scoble, which put a human face. For me, it was shocking because I'd grown up a little bit of a Microsoft hater.
Oh,
you know,
really?
The sort of Bill Gates is the devil, open source is the way sort of thing. And it wasn't until I realized that it might be a 30,000-person company But those are people with families and lives and are passionate about what they're doing and think what they're doing is good. And they try to do good. It should be less about connecting with robots, search engines, and more about how can I say something that's meaningful? How can I open up what we're already doing? The conversations that I already have every day with my customers, how can I put that out there and let people know what's different about us, what's special about us? So I think it's really sort of a natural progression. And in my view, it should be even easier for small business owners. Because there's no legal department, there's no HR department, there's nothing. You're a master of your own domain, and you can say whatever you like.
Making money off your blog is in advertising.
So on WordPress.com, we do not currently allow people to put their own advertising.
Yep.
Part of that was we wanted the community to develop in the right way. The people, everyone who's on WordPress.com right now is doing it because they love writing, not because they're trying to make it quick buck. And I think now that we sort of bootstrapped the community, we're about to pass 1 million blogs.
Yeah.
That sort of it's got its identity now. You know, people wanting to make some money off their blogs is definitely a really big feature request. So probably the approach we'll take there is a little bit of a managed ad service where, you know, you'll give us your Google ID and your Yahoo ID or something like that, and we'll just sort of optimize it for you. You know, set some parameters, say, I want to show ads to maybe half my users or something like that, and we'll try to optimize it to ensure you get the most money possible. That's probably the approach we're going to take. And I should clarify, of course, if you're running your own WordPress, you can do whatever you like. There are no restrictions. You could, you know, put flashing punch a monkey ads above every post. But on WordPress.com, we try to enforce a little bit more tastefulness, because I feel like you can make more money in the short term if you plaster ads over everything.
Oh.
But in the long term, you're going to lose more users, and you're ultimately going to degrade what you're doing.
Yeah.
Once you go down that path, it's hard to go back as well.
Tell me about tags.
So I think tags do two things. They're not that different from categories, fundamentally. But what they did was, generally with categories, you create them first, and then you write. And what tags do is they allow you to, in the context of whatever you're writing, let's say you're writing a post about your dog, you can tag it, dog, my backyard, the name of the dog, maybe the dog's name Judy. You know, you can just go through all of that and just sort of write those on the fly, spontaneously. That in and of itself is useful, I think, because it organizes the content in a way that makes it easier for you, personally, to find it later. There's a serendipity effect where, you know, my backyard tag and your backyard tag might be writing about something, talking about something that's of mutual interest to us. So we have a tag system on WordPress.com, which, you know, for a tag like Boston Red Sox, we'll show all the people across 1 million blogs talking about Boston Red Sox. And it's able to create connections, both for the reader and for the author, to show, sort of connect them to a community. And it's completely ad hoc. It's not like you have to sign up and join a group. It's just people who happen to be talking about the same things that you are. And it could be pretty fascinating. I mean, there are some things that are always at the top. People love talking about personal and music and politics and things like that. But more interesting to me is what pops up every now and then. So New Year's resolution is really big for a week. And Boston Red Sox is big when they're in the series, or Yankees, or, you know, it's events. Things pop up around events and allows you to sort of see the whole conversation, get a lot of different viewpoints rather than just one blog's thoughts on things.
As a researcher, for me, networking sites, they're amazing because I can go in there and I know that whatever I'm getting is fairly recent. It's not a 4-year-old report.
Oh, yeah, it drives me crazy.
I know. So I looked and I think, what a wonderful thing. What would search engines have to do?
Well, I think everyone's doing blog search now. So Google has a way to search blogs. Over there in the corner, Sphere. Their index, I think, is only now 7 days. So they're literally saying, if it's older than 7 days, we're not looking at it. And I think there's a huge value there for recent things. And there's a value in immediacy. You know, Technority says it's 7 minutes from when you post something to when it's in our index. It's pretty powerful.
It is.
Especially
amazing.
Around events that are just now happening. I think more exciting is where it happens overseas, especially in places where there might be more restrictions on the media. Like one thing we see is we get huge users in Indonesia, which is apparently somewhat restrictive, and it's a Muslim country, and you can do certain things and talk about certain things in public, and sometimes it'll get you in big trouble. So topics like apostasy or around anything which is, you know, different types of religions or losing your religion or anything like that, they just can't. That's never going to be in the newspaper. It's never going to be in the magazine. And if the government knew you were talking about that, you could be in a big amount of trouble. But online, not only can you talk about it with relative impunity, you can connect with other people who share those topics with you. And for something, particularly there's been some powerful movements around women who might be, you know, oppressed in certain countries, able to connect with women elsewhere and sort of see that this can be better. You know, this is what we should be fighting for. This is, and it's both an inspiration and a support network. And I think that's pretty powerful.
How long has WordPress.com been around, really?
December of last year. Not this year, but last year.
Yeah, and you think about that. Wow, and that is pretty cool.
We find this because we tend to attract a savvier audience, more advanced folks. Our user number is growing nicely. We're happy with that. It's about writing about 5,000 blogs a day. But the audience for those blogs is growing much, much faster. It's actually doubling every month or two. A year ago, in April, we probably only did about 14 million pages. And now just a year later, it's more than 10x that. So the audience is growing far faster than the number of bloggers.
Give me a couple of your favorite blogs that you like to read.
Favorite blogs. I love Nick Carr, 37 Cities. They're sort of a software development shop, which shares a lot of our philosophies of less is more. Less software, simpler things, more user-driven development. What else? There's my friends Tara Hunt and Chris Messina. Both bloggers, more on the marketing side, and sort of open source evangelism and communities. They write some really good things. I really enjoy reading their blog. Mark Pilgrim, diveintomark.org, is a really great blog. He writes mostly about technology-related stuff. And then for more mainstream things, I read GigaOM.com, I read TechCrunch, I read Matt Marshall, Adventure Beats. These are all great places to get sort of industry news. Mm. I enjoy them all.
Matt, thank you.
Okay,
you've
pleasure.
Been amazing.
Listen up, it's Lydia here in Silicon Valley.
Tech Talk Radio's US correspondent Lydia Davis is offering listeners a chance to ask questions about blogging.
If you don't know the answer, I'll find out for you.
This is a great opportunity for people who are starting out in the world of blogging and why small businesses in particular would benefit from the Web 2.0 world. Visit Lydia's blog at blogwell.wordpress.com, or you can find the link on the Tech Talk Radio site. Go to the Tech Talk Radio tab on Blogwell and ask away. Fellow Aussies get preferential treatment. Take advantage of the fact that Lydia's also the marketing strategist for WebMama, one of Silicon Valley's biggest search engine optimization and search engine marketing firms. So why not hit her for some SEO help as well?
Come on, guys, let me have them.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio, and probably the last bit of the evening for the night. So, yes, you're joining Dr. Ron, Andrew McComb and Mark Diggins here at the studio this evening. One thing which Dr. Ron was going to talk about was Zoip. Tell us about Zoip, Dr. Ron. It's got me most intrigued. Oh, dear. Try that fader. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Zoip. The ultimate pastime for computer nerds. This is marrying a few different technologies and a very, very old computer game.
Really?
I got this email to me during the week and I thought, what a fantastic abuse of technology. Andrew and Mark, a PABX, or as the Americans say, a PBX, is typically thought of as being all work and no play. How much fun can you have with a phone system that's designed to provide voicemail and call extensions, right?
Yeah, for offices.
Well, it turns out that if you open up the code and let developers run wild, strange things can happen. Do you remember playing those old text adventures on very early computers, like your IBM PCs?
Oh, this is where this is going.
Your Apple II, your Commodore 64, your TRS-80 systems.
Yeah, what? I'm just trying to think of one of those games. Like we used to type in, is it in the candlestick maker in the ballroom or something like that?
Yeah. And they used to have one that was like a wizardry
Zork. That was it.
This is spot on, Andrew. And it was completely unsolicited, that response, ladies and gentlemen. Do you remember, I've got in my notes here, the groundbreaking text adventure Zork, the Great Underground Empire, which kept spellbound in the 1980s as we battled trolls and grues and thieves in the subterranean labyrinth. Mark, do you remember? You're looking a little bit puzzled.
I had a German one that was sort of like, was this German by any chance?
No.
I played something similar, but not that one.
All right. Well, text adventures and PABXs, what have they got in common?
Absolutely nothing until now by the sounds of it.
Enter Zoip. which stands for Zork over IP.
Oh, dear.
Software developer Simon Dittner has written an interactive voice response application for the open source Asterisk system using speech recognition and text-to-speech.
That's what I love about engineers with too much bad time.
Absolutely. In the game, the Zoip system reads out the Zork description in text using a Festival text-to-speech engine. So it says in text-to-speech, "You are standing in a small room with passages to the east and south. Blood stains and deep scratches mar the walls."
I don't think I can handle this conversation with a voiceover IP, with a text to. Oh no, you know, it'd be like ringing the IVR.
Another extension.
Mark. No, we're much more bleeding edge than pressing buttons. It uses speech recognition. So then you say east or south or kill troll with sword, and the speech recognition engine passes that back to Zork. So he's glued Asterisk, Festival, Sphinx 2 is the speech rec engine, and Zork all together. He's done it using Perl. He said it only took him 48 hours to get the project working, thanks to the openness of Asterisk and the community that surrounds it.
Fantastic. What a great abuse of technology that is.
So, Zoip. There you go.
So what happens if you haven't got a PABX, you've got an old digital exchange or something like that? You're up the creek, really, aren't you? Because you can't do all that.
You can do it over IP, because Asterisk is an open source phone system. And if you don't have a traditional PABX, you can use an old computer and you can do it all via IP.
Okay.
Very good.
You can build your own phone system.
Google introduced universal search, or is about to, or is sort of in the throngs of doing universal search. Have any of you guys heard about this new...
I did hear about it, but please explain. It sounds very intriguing.
Well, up until recently, Google, if you went along, you'd type in what you were looking for and it would return a web page to you. Whatever the result would find. But now, because Google's indexing so many different things, like videos and flash files and all those sort of things, blogs.
Movies,
video, all those sort of...
Audio files, all sorts of things.
Probably companies as well.
News archives, images.
PDF files.
Yep, all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
What they've designed to do now is they're actually bundling it all into the one search. So when you type in Tech Talk Radio, for example... Heaven forbid you're going to get pictures of us that have been indexed by Google on the web page. By the way, you did take a good photo the other day when Robert Broomhead was in. Have you seen those photos on the website? They're terrific.
There's new crew photos.
Yeah, have a look on the web page.
You know, while we hide behind microphones, not TV cameras.
No, that's right. And a few post-it notes discreetly placed on those images. So.
Oh, very funny. I did look a bit cranky, didn't I, there? I don't know what was going on there.
So give it a shot, the new universal search. This is straight from the guys at Searchology, and I'm going up to Google for their developer day thing on Thursday.
So it'll be good. Running, and it's a separate part of Google?
I believe so. Yes, it began the other day, being yesterday, according to the printout that I have here, which is probably about a week or so ago. It may be in the US only. I don't know whether it's active from Australia. I haven't tried it yet, to be quite honest. But have a visit at google.com and see what you think. So just before we go to the break, because we're rapidly running out of time tonight, one interesting thing that's come out of the sort of a sub-ether of recent times, you know, this HD Blu-ray DVD scenario that's sort of been floating around. Yeah, that's it.
The battle between the new high-definition formats.
In the first quarter of 2007, according to the US trade publication Home Media Magazine, they reported that 70% of all discs purchased were of the Blu-ray DVD format and 30% were of the HD DVD format. Does this sound sort of close to what VHS and Beta were in their initial sort of setup things?
Yeah, I think so. I would have said Blu-ray.
Hey, how's your plasma going, by the way? Oh, your big TV set.
Excellent.
Yeah?
TV's good. Oh, I've got a gripe, though, with my LG DVD VCR thing.
We're off topic and off time, but yes, so quick.
Really quickly, plug HDMI cable into one, HDMI cable into the other. Format not supported.
I'd be dark.
Oh, no.
You'd think you go on HDMI, you'd be right, wouldn't you?
So what happened?
I don't know. It doesn't work.
Have you rung the manufacturer?
Is it an LG?
I'll have to ring during working hours. I didn't do it today. And I also looked up the standards and haven't read the document yet.
So. Are they both the same manufacturer, Mark?
No.
Okay.
One's Samsung, one's LG.
But you'd think it would be a common standard.
Yes, that's
HDMI
right.
HDMI is HDMI as far as I was
LG
concerned.
LG says that we say HDMI standard type A, and the other one says, well, I do 480 pixels and interlaced and all those other things, which doesn't tell you which standard it is. So I have to read up on it and find out. But isn't that disappointing?
It's very disappointing. You'd think it would just, you'd plug it together and it would just work.
That's what you'd hope. That's what I did when I bought it. I didn't even think that, that would be an issue.
I think Blu-ray's going to win, Andrew.
I agree.
Back to the topic.
I agree. Now, also, being back to where we were before we went to the break, where Mark said he couldn't access the Chaser on his Telstra Next-G handset.
Oh, yes.
We did a bit of homework before during the break, and we found the IP, and it comes back to Canberra.
Yep.
It's registered to Canberra. So apparently the Chaser don't like having Canberrans watch
and
there.
And we use whatismyip.com. That was very good.
Whatismyip, followed by another site.
And
which
then we used, you did a Google search on IP to country.
That's right.
And
let's talk amongst your friends. Here we go.
Third one down said something like
IP to location.com. You put in the IP address and it tells you where exactly the IP address is, down to the, even at the latitude and longitude, would you believe?
Told us it's coming from Canberra. So
apparently, yes.
There you can know, you can do that from your own home.
And we do know that there are a lot of people at the ABC that listen to this show, especially here where we broadcast from in Melbourne. And as a result, guys, go down and speak to the people who run the web servers and say, can you unblock the range 192.148? It's Telstra. Let them in. Come
sounds,
on, they're not that
bad.
Yeah,
sounds like an ABC fault, not a Telstra fault.
Yes.
Because
I don't like people overseas watching The Chaser. I can't understand
now,
that.
Now, it could be related to a Google search and stuck as a favourite, so maybe it was something to do with that as well. We need to look into that.
Oddspot gadgets and website coming up after this.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my own.
There's a small software house in the United States specializing in sharing and collaboration applications. This is a software gadget of the week. And their address is tubesnow.com. Tubesnow.com. Tubes are like synchronized folders and they can contain anything. The idea behind this little software gadget is that you run a small application on your desktop, a bit like a messenger application like Yahoo or MSN.
Is it like a widget or is it different?
It's just a bit like a widget, Mark, yeah. And you invite people by email to belong to a tube.
Okay.
All right. Whatever you drag and drop into the tube is seen by other members of the tube.
Right.
So it replicates software. So you could drop in an MP3 file or a Word document or even like a browser URL, drop it into the tube, and anyone who's subscribed to that tube, who belongs to that, automatically sees what you see.
So it's just like a big folder.
It's just like a big
that you subscribe to and everyone can see what's inside that folder.
Exactly right. It's like a replication, an online replication service, but it works online and offline. So that was a clever idea, software gadget, if you
I'm
like.
I'm still trying to come to terms with the tube thing.
Yeah, and the offline bit.
Well, the tubes connect all the computers together and all the users together.
Oh, I see. It's all plywood.
It's the internet.
Words.
It's all tubes and pipes and things.
Yeah,
tubesnow.com. That's the software gadget of the week.
Yep, I get it now. Okay, good.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This week's website is www.ozpoi.com and then /downloads.html.
OzPOI, point of interest?
Point of interest, yes.
Australian point of interest. This sounds like something
you do. It is an Australian website, and it's for mainly for people who run TomTom, which we've talked about before, which is the
GPS is in the car.
Yeah, so you can get it on your PDA or some Nokia phones these days and that sort of thing. And this particular website allows you to download, like, waypoint files, which you can then put on, and as you're travelling along and your TomTom is showing you where you are, it'll also show you, as you drive past, where the service stations are, or you can look them up. But not just, you know, service stations, we've got banks, trades, hardware stores, parks.
Oh, good, so you can find out where your nearest Bunnings is just by loading
parks,
into your...
Yep. All the transport, the stations.
Because it's handy if you're out in the bush somewhere, you think, oh dear, I'm in trouble now.
But if you're coming from overseas, you could actually find out where all the public toilets were. If you were travelling interstate, you could find out where all the public toilets were.
A quick loop break at the local servo or something like that.
The nearest McDonald's store?
Oh, no, I don't know.
Well, there's other ones there, Pizza Hut, Pizza Haven, a whole lot are in there. Safety cameras, as we call them these days.
Oh, they're the speed things, cameras. The distance on time.
Yeah, the red light, green light cameras.
And includes the slow areas for schools. You know,
oh, fantastic.
Safety zone.
So is this Oz where?
www.ozpoi.com.
Ah, very good. All right, that's the Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
This Odd Spot is called Green Power and was contributed by Yak.
Hello, Yak.
Spending fever has reached all walks of South African life. Here's a fellow who lives in a squatter camp beyond Somerset West in Western Cape who now wants a television set. A new one, mind, not that second-hand thing in the pawn shop window. So he buys one from the high street furniture retailer. But he's back the next day, saying the thing keeps switching off just at the crucial moment. The shop checks it and can't find anything wrong, but soon enough he's back with the same complaint. This time the shop sends out a technician to pop round and see what the problem is. When the technician gets there, he discovers that our guy's shack draws electricity from a nearby traffic light, and the TV only works when the light is green. That's our technology odd spot for the week.
Something that's just come in on the wire too, from IT Wire. 4 to 6 cups of coffee a day may calm gout. For those IT people that like having their cups of coffee and get that tingle in the foot from time to time when they've had one too many glasses of red wine, there you go. Keep drinking your coffee, boys. I don't know what that's doing in an IT newsfeed, but nonetheless, obviously it means something to somebody out there.
That's a whole food group for IT people.
It is, isn't it? Yes. Caffeine. You do need to keep up your caffeine.
Whether it's coffee or Coca-Cola or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think it's along the lines that, you know, they say these days you've got to have dark chocolate and you've got to have red wine for your antioxidants, and when your red wine goes to your foot and you get gout, then drink coffee.
Well, it is the most important meal of the day, breakfast.
So. You have been listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Across the other side of the panel is Dr. Ron and Mark Diggins. Thank you very much for your company. Don't forget to catch us on the pod if you're listening to us on the radio, because there is a couple of extra bits in the podcast that you don't actually get on the radio. It's the added extra bonusy mixy thing that you get from time to time. So till next week, it's bye for now. Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panelists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.